Hi, my name is Guy English, and this is Debug, a new developer-centric conversation show. Rene?
And I'm Rene Ritchie, and I'm joining Guy for this new shindig. I guess, just quickly, Guy, the reason for this is that there's a lot of fantastic developers out there, and we wanted to talk to them.
Yeah, definitely. I like the idea of... I mean, I always love WWDC and getting to talk to people, so this feels like a good excuse to kind of carry that throughout the year a little bit.
Dub-dub all year round.
Right.
And I'm thrilled. Our first guest is Lorne Brichter of 8-Bit's fame, of the original Tweety fame, and now of Letterpress fame. How are you, Lorne?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Can you give us just a quick, I mean, a lot of people already know you and who you are, but can you give us just a quick rundown on how you became an iOS developer?
Sure. I was, back in high school, I discovered OS X, the public beta, and I installed Project Builder. I got into Cocoa programming, and I played with that all through college. And when I graduated, Apple gave me my first job working on the original iPhone. And after that, I went independent. I made Tweety. And the rest is kind of history.
So it's weird. So you've been internal to Apple. Did you find it weird when you started working outside? And how do you find it now, like years later?
When I left Apple, I kind of wasn't really sure what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I had the idea for a Mac Paint, a modern version of Mac Paint. And I just started working on it. And I found that I loved working on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it reminded me, you know, back when I was in school, you know, I basically would skip homework and just work on my own stuff all the time. I just love working that way. And it hasn't worn off yet.
So you left Apple shortly after the first iPhone shipped, right? 1.0?
Yeah, it was right when it shipped.
Yeah, like you'd left before the 2.0 API access.
Yeah, okay. there was no App Store. I didn't even own an iPhone when I left.
Really?
I still had my Motorola Razr.
I like those phones. It went bad.
I love the Razr.
Yeah. Why did you leave? Like, I don't know if you've told this story before, but I'm certainly not aware of what what it is.
Working at Apple was probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me, you know. But I was from the East Coast. My whole family was on the East Coast. My girlfriend wanted to move back East. We figured we would go back there. That was kind of the impetus for the decision.
Yeah, that's actually one reason that I would basically not consider working for Apple.
Yeah.
The second is that I spend a lot of time in game studios and they work you like crazy, and I don't want to go back to that kind of stuff.
A 60-watt bulb can only go at 120 for so long.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Would you consider rejoining another big company or any other company, or are you now sort of a one man band?
I really like working for myself. I mean, I say that now. You know, I've had an app out for 2 weeks. I've only been answering email, like support emails, for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'll get tired of it. But I think I'm in this for the long haul at this point.
I think that makes sense. I mean, you left Twitter, so it was kind of clear that you wanted to just go and do your own thing. And I think the body of your work speaks to you wanting to experiment, certainly in the user interface area. And that's hard to do when there's a big investment behind a product that you're going to do. So I think probably working for yourself is going to offer like greater opportunity to follow what you think is the best course of action, or at least the most interesting course of action.
Yeah, putting it that way makes a lot of sense. Thank you for clarifying my thoughts.
That's okay. You're kind of in that, you've just released Letterpress, which is another huge hit. You're kind of in the unfortunate situation that if you don't keep knocking them out of the park, people are going to think that you've lost your touch.
Yeah, I mean, two might still be a coincidence. But I don't know if I would call Letterpress a success yet. It's only been 2 weeks. So I'm still pretty curious how it's going to all pan out.
Well, it's ridiculously popular. So
So what made you decide on Letterpress as your follow-up to Tweety? I mean, I think when we spoke previously, you said that you were playing word games with your wife, but it wasn't the word game you wanted to play.
Yeah, we just wanted a little multiplayer word game to play against each other, you know, turn-based, asynchronous, that kind of thing. And we're, you know, there was Words with Friends, but you know, we kind of got tired of it.
So you worked on it for what, about a year after leaving Twitter?
No, I didn't work on it for nearly that long. What happened was after I left Twitter, I had this massive backlog of ideas, you know, going back mm-hmm. 5-6 years, stuff I was thinking about college, and I just hadn't had time to work on it. So when I left, I kind of just plowed through my old to-do list, and I ended up making, you know, a dozen or so things, most of which we'll never see the light of day, but Letterpress... Letterpress was one of those things. I was actually working on a completely different game, and then we had the idea of making a little word game. So I dropped that other game completely, and I picked this up. I'd say Letterpress took me about 2 months of solid work, you know, plus a little extra to get out the door.
Do you think you're going to go back and revisit some of those ideas?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm still kind of juggling a few, but mm-hmm. my time is spent working on Letterpress now.
So one thing that's totally crazy about Letterpress, which I don't think a lot of people realize, is that that isn't done with UIKit. It's all done with custom OpenGL stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend doing it. I'm just insane for doing that.
Yeah, so was that just for the fun of it? Or what, you'd had GL stuff for your previous game attempts and you just reused it, or what?
I like to think of myself as a graphics programmer by trade. You know, through college, I basically taught myself OpenGL, and you know, this was back in the dark ages. You know, there's no such thing as shaders or
right.
or anything like that. And then at Apple, my job was on the embedded graphics and imaging team, so we did, you know, driver level stuff.
That's so great. Yeah, I have a similar background. From games and yeah. I was jealous that you did it because basically it looked like you re-implemented UIKit. Like you've got the same you've cloned the scroll view and done a whole bunch of other stuff, and it just looks like it would be a really fun and sort of crazy project to work on.
Yeah, it was crazy. But you know, I had two inspirations for it. One, I wanted to just see if I could do it. And like there were a couple things about UIKit, you know, that I you can only appreciate if you kind of do it yourself. You know, like mm-hmm. you know, Jedi build their own lightsabers kind of thing. There are some things about UIKit that I didn't like. You know, I wanted to experiment. Hey, what if I did it this way? And there are a couple of things in it that I do vastly differently than UIKit. And I think it actually worked out pretty well.
I think it worked out great. It's got a really great feel to it. It does feel – it maintains a bit of the iOS feel, but also seems to borrow from Windows Phone or Metro. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it's – I've seen parallels drawn between them. And it's a great, clean-looking interface with like, and it just seems to work perfectly.
Nice. So. Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a huge fan of the style of Windows Phone. But I mean, from almost a technical perspective, as much as an aesthetic perspective, because it's doing things that the graphics hardware is naturally good at doing. You know, you're not coercing it to doing something crazy.
Is this when you sat down to make Letterpress? Did you have a process? Did you make a almost like your own work order for this, and then go through it, or do you just kind of, because you're a one man shop, you just do the parts that you want when you want to do it?
I don't even remember the order that I did it in. This whole like UIKit replacement thing was one of these many projects that I started on when I left Twitter. So I kind of, when I decided to do Letterpress, I kind of, you know, took the covers off of that and dusted it off, and you know, I don't know, just started building a game with it.
I'm still amazed that you. So I'm playing with it right now, and I'm just amazed at how smooth everything is.
I tried to target the 3GS, like the 3GS and the iPad One were the bears to get, you know, mm-hmm. working. But if it's fast on those, it's fast on everything.
Yeah, it's not just that it's fast, it's that it's flawless. A lot of things appear fast, but then there's stutters, there's stammers, there's hiccups. It takes a second to realize what you're doing. When even on older hardware, this just seems very, very responsive.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's not perfect yet. There are a couple stutters because of the way, like, you know, Game Center hands back data. And I'm doing a little too much work on the main thread in a couple of cases. But I just haven't gotten around to fixing it.
Let's talk about Game Center, since you segued into that. Sort of infamously, Game Center fell down the same weekend that you released Let It Press. And people were kind of taking that as a sign that you managed to destroy their server somehow. Is there a particular heavy use case that you use, or do you think it's just random scale of the game?
I don't know. As cool as it would be to take credit for it, I don't know if it's coincidental.
Being as big an influx of nerds playing one almost completely dependent on Game Center game at one time.
Right. I mean, what did Apple quote? Apple quoted something like 150, 160 million Game Center accounts on the last thing. I feel like there are a lot of Game Center games, but they're all using it for achievements and late leaderboards. Like, that's basically it.
Right. So, I guess we can nerd out a bit since it's more developer-centric. But you use Game Center to do the turn-by-turn stuff.
Yeah.
The turn-based gaming, which is, I think, I can't think of another example, certainly not one that's as popular as how Letterpress seems to be.
Monkeys have, it's Lost Cities, I think.
Okay. Is that big?
I don't know how popular it is.
Yeah. And how do you find that API?
I don't like it, but...
Okay.
But I think it has the potential to be really awesome. You know, using Game Center is a mixed bag. You know, on the one hand, I don't have to babysit servers. Apple handles everything for me. You know, the game can get as big as I want, and it's on Apple's shoulders to make the back end scale. Well, that's awesome. You know, but the downsides are obvious. I have no visibility into the problems. Apple doesn't do postmortems or anything. So it's kind of very opaque.
At what point along the process did you make the decision to go all in on Game Center? And did you spend a lot of time trying to weigh the pros and cons?
It was never really a decision. It was kind of obvious. You know, there are these turn-based APIs. Apple said, hey, you know, they're new on iOS 5. And, you know, I figured, I can target iOS 5 and iOS 6 and up. And it seemed obvious. It's like, why wouldn't I use the turn-based APIs to make a turn-based game for iOS?
Why reinvent the wheel?
Well, because he just did it for UIKit.
I have to take small bites though.
Yeah. So, did you find yourself structuring the app around the Game Center APIs?
Eventually, you know, I completely misinterpreted the way the Game Center APIs work. Because it's kind of this weird. It's straddling the line between being, you know, stateless request response style APIs versus, you know, stateful. I have these objects that change on their own. You know, style. Mm-hmm. I don't think the API really knows what it wants to be. You know, if I were redesigning the Game Center APIs, I would expose two levels. You know, like at the level zero would be, you know, totally stateless, idempotent, you know, request response style things. You know, don't even hand me model objects, just dictionaries back and forth or something. And then on top of that, I would build this stateful, you know, nice object oriented thing where I have game objects and they, you know, you can observe them with KVO or they fire off notifications when like game state changes. But right now the way the API is designed, it's kind of doing both and it's inconsistent.
Right. So you don't have that solid level zero base thing that you can build your own stuff on.
Right. And I completely misinterpreted it as a level one API where it's like, oh, I have these objects. I can, you know, it's just nice and easy. But, I need to kind of keep my game state in sync with Game Center local state in sync with Game Center service state. You know, there's like lots of state that's really easy to get.
Oh, it's like a three-layer stack.
Yeah, it's very painful.
Yeah, okay. Would you, do you regret using it? Like, would you change it?
No, I mean, as painful as, you know, I guess at this point, my interests and Apple's interests are aligned. So anything I can do to make Game Center better, I would be more than happy to do. And I don't know if I could have launched Letterpress without it. You know, I would have had to invest a ton of time and energy into building my own backend. Who knows what Letterpress would have looked like if I had to do that.
I think that this is kind of the way that a lot of APIs that Apple puts out go. Is that they save you so much work that using them is effectively a no-brainer. But earlier on in their life, they're kind of rough around the edges, and they end up causing some pain that you can't necessarily address yourself directly.
Yeah, totally.
I think like Core Data is a little bit like that.
I still don't use Core Data.
Yeah, no, I don't either. Like, a bunch of people have sworn off it, but then there's a bunch of people who really love it and know exactly what to do with it.
Is there a danger in, for Game Center in particular, it strikes me that Apple doesn't have anything on the iPhone built in or in the App Store that uses Game Center. So they don't particularly feel any pain when it's not working. And it's always going to be people like you and other Game Center developers that are going to find the problems first or hit into the pain points first. So was that sort of something that weighed into your decision?
Yeah, honestly, you know, I think that's an awesome insight, and I didn't even think about it, you know, when I was originally making the game. You know, even Microsoft, you know, like with, like, I feel like the ultimate battle is going to be between Apple and Microsoft in the living room. You know, that's when this gaming thing is going to kind of come to a head, and Microsoft has got a bit of a head start.
Well, Microsoft, like Sony and like Nintendo, makes first-party titles. So they, in effect, they're dog-fooding all of their APIs, and they often make the most popular, most successful games on their platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, having worked in that biz for a number of years, developing for the Xbox is a pleasure compared to developing for the PlayStation or even Nintendo. They are easier to work with, but they're still harder to work with than just getting on the App Store.
Right,
you still got to jump through a lot of hoops. But yeah, I think you're right. Having the Xbox in the living room playing Blu-rays, or it doesn't play Blu-rays, whatever, DVDs. And it's got, like, I mean, everything has Netflix now, but it's got a lot of functionality that iOS also has. And Xbox Live is really impressive and connects a lot of people in a lot of interesting ways.
And a lot of titles are being deployed on Xbox Live Arcade almost as fast as they are on iOS now.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think you're right. I think ultimately for the living room stuff, there will be that'll be where things come to a head. That said, that doesn't mean that Apple loses anything. I don't think they need to win that battle necessarily, because they've still got, I mean, all of the handheld devices are super popular.
Right. No, yeah. I don't think, you know, obviously Microsoft doesn't have to lose for Apple to win and that kind of thing. But Game Center is going to be more and more important.
Mm-hmm. What kind of scared me is that Apple has this reputation for not getting social and this reputation for not getting gaming. And now Apple's putting out something that's basically social gaming. Maybe it would behoove Apple to have sort of like a gaming and social czar. I noted in the press release they gave Maps and Siri to Eddie Q, for example, but there was no mention of giving Game Center to anybody.
Yeah, I don't know who owns Game Center. But it is true. You know, I just added a send friend request button into Letterpress 1.1. And the way it works is, you know, you tap this button and then it brings up the standard Game Center sheet where you can type in an email address or a Game Center username. So you can send a friend request and then you can play them in Letterpress. But the strangest thing about it is if you type in an email address of someone who doesn't have a Game Center account, it just throws back this really like obscure error. You know, it's the perfect opportunity to send them an email. Like, and onboard them into the Game Center ecosystem. It's like, your friend wants to play this game with you. You know, it's a perfect way to get someone to play, but it doesn't do that. The person you send the invite to has to already be set up with Game Center.
I should introduce you to a friend.
File a radar. No.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's exactly that kind of thing that Apple kind of really doesn't quite get all the time. So, yeah, it's sort of unfortunate. On the other hand, they are way more game-friendly now than they ever used to be, certainly since the introduction of iOS.
And yeah, games have totally taken over the App Store.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can speak to this, Lauren, a lot of work on the OpenGL stack goes towards improving performance in games, especially on the Mac. I don't know how true that is on iOS, but, I mean, it's not a second order thought. Supporting games on iOS, I think it's
I guess I'm a little biased because like that's my old team at Apple, but it's without a doubt the best like mobile OpenGL implementation on the planet, like in
miles.
Of the world. I mean it's not even close.
Did you see those? I mean, I know you did, but the blending shaders.
No, I haven't seen that.
So yeah, you can for like instead of just your blend mode, you can actually put in a shader in there.
When did this come out?
iOS 6, I think.
No shit. Oh, I gotta check that out.
It is crazy. The amount of like the stuff that you can do with that is just bananas.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's like the most exciting thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I know. I was like, because it was just on a couple of slides and I'm like, what the fuck? Oops, sorry.
Is it like a fragment shader style thing where you just get two inputs?
Exactly. Yeah. I haven't looked into it that much because it's one of those things. It's like, I don't know. I think that you probably are similar with this given how many projects you say you've got. But if you get excited about something, you just go and do it. to the exclusion of getting actual work done. So I was so excited about that. I'm like, I don't want to look at this. I gotta shut my app and do some work, you know. But I will eventually get back to it.
I noticed that when you did do Game Center, for example, you did matchmaking and you did the turn-based, but you stayed away from things like challenge. And challenges are almost like spam on Game Center for me. Was there a lot of stuff that you picked and chose from very carefully?
I think it was more of a function of time. I still want to do achievements and leaderboards, but I'm not exactly sure what they look like. I honestly haven't seen challenges. I didn't read any of the documentation on what exactly is that.
You can challenge people to sort of, like, one of the biggest example now is there's an extreme road game where I wake up in the morning and 20 people have challenged me to beat their road racing time.
Got it. So it's like horse almost.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just, I guess it's a way, because I don't have the app installed, so I guess it's a way for Game Center to push you towards downloading or buying other apps.
Huh. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
That would kind of annoy me.
Yeah, there's no filtering. So, for example, you can say only accept challenges from contacts, but I play letterpress with a lot of people who aren't in my contacts. And also, if I turn off those notifications, I don't get letterpress notifications. There's no granularity to it yet.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of people have complained about the lack of granularity for notifications.
Yeah, I mean, notifications in general are kind of a sore spot for the OS, I think, especially if you get a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I was curious when I saw the app, you have themes in there. Why? I know that's kind of a silly question, and I know it's reasonably easy to implement, but I thought it was interesting and a bit, I don't want to say unnecessary, like it's pointless, but it was a curious decision.
I kind of see it as a cherry on top for the in-app purchase, because it's one in-app purchase to unlock the whole thing. You know, I don't nickel and dime you with like a dozen different things, or like it's 99 cent per theme.
Oh, I hadn't realized that the themes come with the purchase.
Yeah, you only get the default theme by default, and then you unlock it for, you know, more than two games at a time in themes, and, you know, the ability to see play words and stuff.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I mean, that's what I get for just buying it on the spot. But,
well, thank you.
Yeah. Do you have any other plans for in-app purchase? It seems like word packs could be interesting.
Yeah. Someone had the idea for an Urban Dictionary word pack, which I think would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting the way that you went with in-app purchases. And you said that you didn't choose, I think your language was you didn't choose to optimize for in-app purchase. But with regards to themes, when there's no themes in something, people complain almost immediately. For some reason, mainstream users love them, their themes. But also, we've heard repeatedly that, for example, advertising, turning off advertising is not something that incentivizes people to pay an in-app purchase. But you seem to have found a good formula where you get enough functionality in the basic game, you're kind of, it's almost a no-brainer to pay for the upgrade.
Letterpress was an experiment in a lot of ways, and it was an experiment exactly in that regard. You know, I had no experience building a free app, and I had no experience with in-app purchases before. And I remember back in the Tweety One days, you know, everyone wanted a dark theme. So in Tweety One, you know, I added a dark theme, and that was one of the things that actually helped it start to take off. You know, I eventually like removed the theme options in Tweety too, but by that point, you know, it was already a popular app.
Was that in React? Were the users reacting to Craig's work on Twitterific?
I bet, yeah, because they were so used to the dark theme in Twitterific, they didn't like the light one in Tweety.
And a lot of people have angry spouses who get upset if the screen is bright in bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you don't want to say this on the air, but Renee can fix it. How do you feel about Twitter?
I don't know. I'm conflicted about it, because to me, I see apps like Tweetbot doing awesome work and doing nothing but make Twitter better. And their market share is so small that it really doesn't affect Twitter in any way. You know, it's like a flea on their back. But it's a flea that's actually making Twitter users happy, and that analogy I've stretched it way too far. it confuses me that they're trying to, you know, shut it down. I guess it just confuses me.
They didn't think of a more creative way where they could both appeal to their advertisers that they want to bring on board, but also keep something for the very small niche of original / hardcore users that value those kinds of apps.
Right. Yeah. I don't think anyone would argue that it doesn't cost Twitter a ton of money to run the service. And third-party developers absolutely should kick in if they're, you know, going to be making money off of it. And at the same time, you know, if users are using an app, you know, they should be able to see Twitter ads if that's what Twitter wants to show them.
I always thought it'd be a nice thing if Twitter just said, okay, all advertising belongs to us. We're serving it along with timelines. You cannot filter it out. But if you want to make money, you can just charge for your app. Advertising is ours. Charging for the app is yours. You're a minuscule part of our audience segment anyway. Just go on about your business.
Yeah, that seems like a creative and simple solution to me.
Which means it'll never ever happen.
At the same time, I've never built a billion-dollar company. So, you know, my opinion doesn't really mean much. Twitter might be doing exactly the right thing, you know, to ensure their future.
Yeah, that's what I always end up finding myself thinking when if I write a talk about Apple. It's just – it's kind of not in my league. It's like I don't know. It's too big, you know. It's not like any experience I have can help.
Creeping right. Decimalism is just the numbers are way too large.
Maybe. Yeah.
It occurs to me, Lauren, that you've now made a bit of a practice of writing against very new, not really hard and not really tested APIs, because you had a very early Twitter client and now you've got a very early all-in on GameCenter. GameCenter is not new, but someone going all-in on it has not been that common. Is that sort of a way to kind of test yourself? Do you like those kinds of challenges?
It's funny you brought that up, because I actually had the same realization a couple days ago. it's like going into bad relationships, you know, with the same person over and over again. This was totally unintentional, and I'm realizing that about myself. And I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing.
Well, I think you, like me, and like we were saying with the OpenGL stuff, you get excited about something new, so you just want to try it. You just work against it.
Yeah.
And that often leads to building on something unreliable. Because I think, at least in my case, my excitement can often outweigh sort of a more rational decision-making tree, you know?
But you're doing disruptive work that way. I mean, you're really pushing the bleeding edge, and a lot of Twitter apps follow Tweety, and I'm sure a lot of Game Center apps are going to follow Letterpress. So you kind of get to be there on the frontier.
Yeah, no, there's definite pros.
Would you consider writing against another online service? Like, not necessarily doing a client like, you know, like a Facebook client or something like that, but relying on an online service that's not under your control for the core functionality of your app.
I think I'd like to end that phase of my life. I'd like to take inspiration from Apple to a degree, and, like, you know, own the pieces of technology that I need to own to make successful products.
So more like what Marco does with Instapaper kind of thing, where you'd run the backend.
Yeah.
How are you at backend stuff? Because I'm pretty awful.
PHP was one of the first languages that I learned. I mean, I know that. I know Ruby. I know Python. I'm teaching myself Go. You know, I can use Google App Engine and EC2. And like all of these things I can do. You know, it's not my bread and butter. And unless you do day-to-day, you know, you can't be an expert at it. But the first thing that I built when I left Twitter, this was my first side project experiment, was basically Objective-C server side. So I brought up LLVM, libobjective-c2, and all that stuff on Linux. And I basically think Node.js, but compiled Objective-C. So it's the right architecture, and it's also compiled and fast, and you don't have to deal with like a freaking JavaScript interpreter on the back end, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. So that's great. So you can basically port code easily up to a server.
Right. So I can have, you know, Objective-C client side and server side that's shared. You know, so if I want to validate game state and stuff, I don't have to write all that stuff twice.
Right. That's great. That's a very good idea.
It's web object. It's like a much better version of web objects, you know, if web objects are still around.
Right. Well, it is. But only internally. It drives the store. Drives the store and all that kind of wacky stuff. WebObjects was really cool in its day, I got to say. It was especially when the Objective-C stuff.
Oh, yeah. No,
it was great. I mean,
that today would be killer.
I know. Yeah, it blew my mind back in the day. They Javaized it, right, for WebObjects 6.
Yeah.
And then it was like $800, and they dropped it down to like $90 or something like that.
It went on clearance.
Yeah, and then it just went away.
That was a weird riff, though. I mean, why did that happen? Why did they adopt Objective-C? Like, because they were going to drop Objective-C client-side also.
Right.
They were going to go Java everywhere. So, I mean, I don't understand why they didn't just keep Objective-C on the server side, too.
I think the issue was that they wanted to be able to sort of run on other servers. Like with the Java one, they would run on Sun servers a lot in different, I'm trying to remember the terminology, but like basically like an app server kind of thing would be like it would run a Java instance. And if it was written in Java, it was easier for them to get it supported on these other platforms.
But you could just compile the code. You just compile the code for Sun.
Look, I don't disagree with you. I think the thing is that these app servers would clone. Like, it would basically be little VMs, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I would do the same thing. But, you know, again, I don't run a billion-dollar company. And at the time, it really did look like things were weird for Apple at the time, right? Yeah, like, they had the Java Bridge client-side. I think WebObjects lasted longer than it should have because it's more or less what kept Next alive long enough to get bought. Like at a certain point, they stopped effectively selling the operating system, and it was way more focused on WebObjects stuff. Mm. So I don't know. It's had a weird long life, but I think they're way too married to it now, which is kind of disturbing.
It's kind of there, and they kind of use it. It's like an old battleship.
It's
decommissioned.
But it's really hard to get new talent that knows what they're doing with it. Right?
Nobody knows how to use it anymore.
Right.
Yeah, I just have visions of all the amazingly cool stuff you could do with like LVM server side. Doing basically exactly that, only making it good.
Well, so I figured that's your next project. You're gonna do something crazy server side.
The decision to go free with Letterpress is something that also fascinated me because you hear a lot of times that people will pay 99 cents for an app almost as much as they'll go for free, and that it reduces your tech support burden. It reduces the chances of bad ratings on the App Store because it's not just tire kickers. It's actually people with an investment in the app. But you went right for the free price right away.
Yeah, I'm sure I could have made more money, charging like 99 cents or $1.99 off the bat. I have no doubt that I could have made more money that way. But going free, again, it was an experiment. I wanted to feel out what the free side of the charts, looked like and that kind of thing. And it's tough. I mean, the App Store has definitely changed since the Tweety days.
Well, it's odd now because when Top Grossing first came out, it was a bunch of apps like Navigon and like the iWork apps. And now it's a lot of apps that are basically free, but with, $99 Smurfberry purchases built in with them. It's a completely different, not only a completely different environment, but a completely different metric by which these apps are measured.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, Tweety 2 topped the grossing charts, and it never would be able to do that today. Not in a million years.
Not unless you had a $99 Smurfberry purchase in it.
So do you find it's more competitive or just basically like a total blowout? Like it's really hard to get anywhere? That's a poorly phrased question. But so the scale of the App Store is so much bigger. Does it feel like you can compete or does it feel like you just kind of, it's always going to be a ripple in the pond?
I don't know. I guess the scale has changed. Apps are big nowadays, and I feel like thanks to Renee, I had a really good launch. And the app is kind of holding its own, but companies like Zynga, they just have so much push. I mean, they can do whatever they want.
Right. Yeah, going to hopefully go out of business doing it.
Well, it's interesting though because the App Store was really the first leveling of the playing field for independent developers. Because whether you were Lauren Brichter making Tweety or you were a giant company, whether you were a game developer like EA putting out an app, you were still basically had the same rights and privileges on the App Store. But now, just by sheer volume, it seems to have shifted to marketing, market awareness, and the ability to drive people to your apps, and that gives the big entrenched players again, I think, a bit of an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, Apple certainly helps Apple featured Letterpress, which was huge and amazing. So I think Apple can is trying to level the playing field, and I think they're doing a good job at it. But I mean, I don't know how Zynga does what they do. Like, how do they get so many people to download Words with Friends?
It's really an evil use of psychology. I mean, I don't know how deep you want to dive into it, but there's, if you remember the tulips, a long time ago, tulips had more value than gold. And there's nothing about a tulip that's intrinsically valuable, but there's an ego investment on it. And if you have something that your culture determines is valuable, you will spend a lot of money on it. And games like Zynga, people will not spend 99 cents on a game, but they will spend $100 to have a better looking hut than their friend, because that gives them a huge ego payback, which is the foundation of gamification. And all these games are very good. They do a ton of psychological mapping. They do a ton of behavioral analytics. There's a lot of big data work going into analyzing, you know, when people stop playing, when they start playing, how their friends react to things that they do. And it's really a, I don't know if I should call it evil, but it's really an evil application of psychology that makes these games addictive. And I mean, there are gambling games on the store where you can't win anything because that's illegal, but you can pay a lot of money to play the game. And these are routinely on the top of the grossing charts.
So wait, it's legal as long as they don't, you don't win anything.
Yes. As long as you just give them money to play, it's fine. And they have huge amounts of revenue.
But you can win like coins, but as long as you
win in-game coins, but you can never cash them out. You can put money into getting you in-game coins, but you can never remove that money again.
This seems like a bad investment. Call me nuts.
But you get to be the top player on this thing, and all your friends see you that, you know, you're the best. And it does provide humans with a big sort of a gratification. It's something that we care about very desperately.
Yeah, it's very cynical. I guess in a way, like, game design is sort of that in general, except I think there's a bit more, there's a purity to try to maximize for somebody's fun or enjoyment or challenge rather than for the amount of money that you're going to get. But in the old days, the arcade games were pretty much designed like that too.
Yep.
Like the cabinets were sort of geared to keep taking your quarters. So it's not that much different.
But yeah, Lauren's doing that differently because you're letting us have a one-to-one relationship where I don't have to spend money. I just have to, you know, play that awesome curse word and totally destroy someone on letterpress. And I get an immediate, you know, I immediately want to play again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, if I was trying to optimize for profit, the game would be totally different.
I think I'm not sure if that's obvious to most people, but certainly when I play that game, I'm like, you're just leaving money on the table somehow. I don't know how, but it feels very pure. It feels like a game that you wrote because you wanted to play it.
And yeah, and that's shared. Exactly where it came from.
Yeah, which I think is great. That's exactly. I wish more software came with that sort of philosophy behind it.
And I'm guessing because you were once bought by Twitter, there's no chance that Letterpress will get bought by Zynga.
No. I think selling Tweeted to Twitter was a good move for all involved, definitely at the time. But I'm done selling companies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good news.
Well, you did. I mean, if we look at it, with Tweety, you made basically the client that everyone thought Apple would make if Apple ever made a built-in Twitter client. And then with the iPad version of Tweety, you made one of the first true large screen tablet interfaces that we saw on the iPad, because until then, a lot of UIs were just stretched apps or two column versions of the apps. But you did sliding panels. You did a lot of innovative work. And it seems like that goes back to the challenge. You're not content with making just an app. You always want to try and do something a little differently.
Yeah, Twitter for iPad was a ton of fun to make. I think if it had another 2 or 3 months in the oven, it would have been, you know, it would have stood the test of time. But it wasn't quite finished. It was never quite finished.
So 8-bit started on the Mac.
With Scribbles.
Yeah, I remember when you released that, and I was jealous. I'm like, man, I want to write that app, like a very basic scribbling app. Yeah,
and I mean, everyone remembers Mac Paint. You know that, like, how does Mac Paint not exist anymore? You know, it's like it's such an obvious idea for an app. You know, you want to doodle a little picture, and there's no built-in apps for it. So I mean, Mac Paint was my inspiration for Scribbles, and it was also my first attempt at my own custom UI framework, because Scribbles also was completely OpenGL, and it was a mess. Oh my God. It was basically one big file that did all of the drawing. It was a nightmare.
Oh my God. The very first version of TapTap Revenge was one file. It was written by this guy, Nate True, who's a brilliant hacker and like engineer, like he'll tinker up his own watches and stuff. But man, it was like my first program. And it was like one giant 5,000, 6,000 line.m file.
That's awesome.
It was kind of awesome. So we rewrote that pretty darn quick, but it was fun while it lasted. So you got a thing for doing your own custom UI frameworks.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when I was doing game work, I used to love writing the UI stuff. Like, because you'd have to write your own UI framework in the games.
Sure, yeah. You had nothing to work with.
Yeah, and it was a blast. I don't know if I'd do it on the desktop so much, but...
and then there was TWUI, which was basically the UI kit for Mac thing. I don't know what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, well, they own it now, right?
Yeah, but it's open source.
Does anybody use it?
Yeah, actually, I think Clear for Mac uses it.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, that's an interesting app to me. I don't like it. Not that, but I mean that in the best possible way. Like, it's fascinating. I love that it exists. I just can't use it. It's a little too out there for me.
It doesn't fit with your use case.
Yeah, maybe it just says that I'm conservative or something. I don't know.
It's definitely very modern. I mean, I love the things that they're experimenting with, though.
Oh yeah, exactly. I love experimentation in any form. So I love that it exists. I can't deal with it.
It was an interesting experiment in mapping an almost entirely gesture-based iOS app into a Mac app that requires the use of keyboards and touchpads and things.
Yeah, right. I would love to see Clear with. Have you guys seen the Leap?
Yes. No.
I don't know who said no and yes, but it's the where you can move your hand in front of your screen, and it's got like the cameras on the desk.
That is amazing. I love that thing.
I mean, Clear with it, like an app like Clear with a Leap, I think would be like really cool to use because it's all like hand gestures, Minority Report style stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That would be amazing. I want those to exist. I want them to be a standard part of systems as soon as possible.
Yeah. Because it seems like the Leap works really well, at least from the videos I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like it's relatively easy to incorporate into, say, a laptop with it because they've got the big chin underneath the keyboard, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
So there's like the technology matches common form factors such that it's, I don't want to say it's not that much of a leap, but it...
Nice.
It's not that far of a stretch to incorporate the Leap technology.
And it seems like a better solution than actually putting your fingers on an iMac or a MacBook Pro screen.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. So, I got a little off track, but I wanted to ask you, would you ever consider going back to the Mac?
I mean, Letterpress runs on the Mac right now. I don't think I'm ever going to release it, though, because the market just, it's. I don't think it's big enough.
That's crazy talk, dude. If it's running, I mean, I don't know. It seems like free money to me, but I guess you have to, you know, there's all the support and all of that pain in the ass stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the Mac to some degree reminds me more of Android, where there's just so many configurations and so many ways for software to not work that, you know, it might be a little bit more effort, but it's going to, you know, double the support costs, even if it's only like 10% of the market.
Yeah, especially since you're all GL-based, there's like variations in the cards and the capabilities and all that. Although you don't seem to do anything very – sorry, I don't mean it like that, but – you don't use a lot of multi-texturing. You use pretty much, as far as I can tell, quads with like just color verts.
Yeah, basically.
So it's relatively straightforward. It seems like something that could be done in GL 1.2 kind of thing.
It definitely could. Definitely could.
You mentioned previously that you're working on the next version of Letterpress, and there's a lot of things that people keep coming up with. So, for example, people want a button to instantly rematch the person who just beat them at Letterpress, and they want, you mentioned achievements. How do you start filtering what's going to go into the next version as opposed to what will never be in the product and what's going to wait for future versions?
I basically am going to put everything on the to-do list and then sort it. And then whatever I have time for, I'll do. Rematch is in 1.1. And I have a mysterious Apple engineer to thank for a workaround to getting it to work in OS 6. But you need OS 6 and up for that button to show up. And then after that, One thing I'm working on now is a way to share and replay games. So when a game is over, you'll be able to tap a button and share a link, and that link will take you to like an HTML5 version of Letterpress where you can like scrub through the game or like tap play and it'll like replay all the words.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I think it'll be popular, but it's reminding me how much I hate web development.
Was that an important factor? Because, you know, Instagram just put out Instagram profiles. They were resistant to anything that wasn't a mobile experience for a long time. And now they're reluctantly, I don't know if it's reluctantly, but they're finally adding web profiles. What was the decision-making process for doing the HTML5 version?
There's just no other way to share. You know, I want people to be able to share their games with people who don't already have Letterpress installed. I mean, that's the only way people are going to, you know, learn about Letterpress and like, oh, who made this game? How do I download it? You know, there's a big download link right beneath the game. So you can't just share app to app. HTML is this perfect fallback. As much as it sucks, you know, it's perfect.
Terrible, but it's the best solution possible.
Yeah, like democracy.
Absolutely. Or Skype.
Good. Do you feel guilty about not knowing much or not being super comfortable with web development? Because I feel it's a bit of a blind spot for me.
You know, there's not really a ton to learn. HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, it is what it is. The only things you need to learn are how to work around all of the issues in every single version of the popular browsers, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not a skill I really care about. You know, I'll just go to Stack Overflow and figure it out on the fly.
Right. Like, so, yeah, I mean, I know the basics. I know how to set everything up and do something, but I haven't actually really worked on a web project. And I feel that, I mean, I think that it's a false debate between the web and client code. I think it's not a binary thing. There's always going to be some gradation in between there. But I do feel like I'm kind of developing a blind spot for web-based stuff that I should probably try to deal with. Do you have any sort of holes in your knowledge that you wish weren't there?
I'm sure I do, but I guess my problem is I don't know what my holes are.
Yeah. It's a polite way of saying that you know everything.
I know everything that I know. But
I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And if I know about something that I don't know, then I'll make a point to learn. I mean, doing this HTML version of like Letterpress, I mean, it's not the full game. It's just like a replay code, but it's nice circling back and like learning about all the new things that you can do. Cause the last time I actually, you know, made a real website, you know, was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And now you have reliable, you know, you can kick it into hardware accelerated mode, you know, with some janky CSS and Canvas, like the Canvas element. I've never used that before. It's nice.
Canvas makes me feel good because that basically just drops me back down to all the graphic stuff that I'm very, very capable of doing.
Yeah, and it seems supported enough that I'm going to rely on it.
Okay, I didn't plan to go this direction, but you've worked on GL stacks. You're a very graphics capable guy. WebGL seems like a bad idea to me.
Because of the security stuff for another?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, I'm pretty aware of how badly you can lock up a machine by misabusing OpenGL. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I want it so desperately. Because, I mean, you know, you give me WebGL and, you know, I can take over the world.
Exactly. But you can also take over machines. So.
Cheers.
Sorry, I missed that last bit.
I don't know how to fix those security issues.
Hmm. That's exactly my thought. Like I want this so badly, but the ability for a developer to write a shader that can lock up somebody's graphics card I don't know how you can possibly guard against that.
Yeah.
Because even if you try to analyze the code and see if it's going to lock up in some way, I mean, you're going to miss a case. It's a huge security problem.
Right. I mean, how is native client going to do it? Because native client doesn't give you WebGL, but it lets you execute GL code through what is it called? Like their Pepper API.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they analyze your GL code there.
No. But a native client basically can do anything. I do think there's an issue with anytime an app can access a shared computing resource that can possibly get locked up. I think it's effectively a security problem, right? But at least a native client you've downloaded, it's been now these days through the App Store, it's been signed and all that.
So the only way to use native client apps is through the Chrome store?
Through the Chrome store. Is it? I don't know. Do you know, Rainer?
To use Google's, yeah. I don't know if anyone else is deploying them.
Okay. Either way, I just think that, you know, clicking a link and getting your computer locked up because of WebGL is a real possibility, and it depresses me because I think it would be amazing.
We've put up with that on Flash for so long that I think an average user... No, just...
Well, Flash is interesting because at least they... Here's the thing with the graphics lockup is that Flash is interesting because if you click a link and it freezes, well, at least you can put Flash in a separate process. Yeah. If WebGL locks up your graphics card, it is a component that is shared by the entire system. You can't wall that off as effectively, right? So,
I mean, ultimately, the solution is to have drivers that are a little more robust.
Like
people might exploit real hardware issues, and there are still tons of those. So I guess you can't get around that.
They're also, I mean, Palm was working on WebGL, and now Research in Motion is working on WebGL, and there's a lot of people trying to bring it to mobile because they're basing a lot of their development kit on HTML apps. So I think, you know, maybe cross the fingers those are problems that'll get fixed as development on WebGL itself continues.
I hope so. I just don't see a way of fully safeguarding it, and so I don't know. It's a bit weird. It's interesting. I'd love to see that work out.
I guess we're just gonna have to keep building native apps.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I didn't write about it. I kind of meant to, but when the WebGL stuff came out, it was Microsoft kind of just took a dump on it and said, "Look, this is a bad idea, and we're not going to support it because it's security." And everybody was making fun of Microsoft, like, "Oh, these guys are lame." But like, I was actually like, "No, they've got a point," and they've been bitten by security issues for the past 15 years. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure they're sensitive to it. So anyway, hopefully it all works out.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, Lauren, you went from Tweety to making a game, and you said you were working on other games, so it sounded like you really consciously wanted to do something as different as possible from Tweety. Are games going to be the future, or are you going to have a variety of projects?
Probably a variety. I have no interest in creating a game studio or anything like that. I just kind of wanted to feel out what the game side was like, and I just wanted to make a game that I could play with my wife.
Don't get into game studios, dude.
No.
It's a lot of work. The amount of money that you need, the amount of capital that you need to do anything decent artwork-wise is immense. And the business is pretty brutal.
It's like movie studios.
It's very much like movie studios, yeah. It's pretty much a hit-driven business. And
investment banking.
Yeah. Not that I don't want more games from you. I do. But I mean, I don't bank on getting hit games because it's just not going to happen no matter how good they are.
I want to actually ask the most impertinent question possible, Lauren. Who's better at letterpress, you or your wife?
Believe it or not, this is kind of ironic, but we haven't been playing against each other all that much. Oh. I've been playing against a lot of other beta testers, and she's been playing with all of her friends. Every now and then we'll have a match, and I think she's destroyed me the last couple of games.
Is she tech savvy, or is she someone that you beta test against as being a more mainstream user?
No, she's definitely tech savvy, but she's also more mainstream than me.
Okay.
So this week, well, I think late last week, the word list for letterpress got leaked. I haven't actually looked at the package. Maybe it's just a text file. I don't know.
Just a bunch of text files.
Yeah, I figured. There is now a letterpress solver app out there. How do you feel about
it? There are actually many of them.
Oh, okay. I know one because somebody asked me to beta test it. I'm like, no, I'm not. do you have any thoughts on that? Like,
the dictionary attack ones are basically, it boils down to, it's impossible to solve without having, you know, server-side verification of moves.
Right.
And I can think of a couple ways that Apple could, you know, cleverly let me, you know, verify words on the server, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So it seems to me that cheating is kind of inevitable.
Go ahead.
No. Just you know, play your Game Center friends. Stop playing random opponents, which sucks. But
you can also tell if they're cheating because it's words that have no semblance to reality coming up.
Right. But you also, there's no way to report cheaters or like. I mean, it would be kind of cool if you could, you know, bucket cheaters into one, you know, Game Center like auto match sandbox thing. So they don't play.
I have a feature request that if someone ever plays an unreal word, or even if they play like something like irregardless, if they play something like irregardless or a made up word, the screen just explodes on them. It's like a reverse of a fatality.
The phone just reboots.
Yeah.
I had a bug in years ago when I was playing Wing Commander 2 on my PC. There was some kind of bug. I don't know. My PC's whatever. Every now and then when my ship would get hit and explode, final damage, and it would go to change the camera to the outside view so you could see it exploding, my computer would just reboot, which was awesome because you get hit by a missile and then like the screen would just go blank. The reboot prompt would come up like the old school like IBM BIOS thing would display and it'd be like that one counted. That really hit home, that one.
It's one step away from Whopper asking you if you want to play a game.
Exactly. Yeah. It brought my defeat into my real life pretty much. Regarding cheating and Light Up Pass, one thing that's good about it is I think that I did a lot of work on Tap Revenge and a couple of other games in order to try to block cheating, because those are the kind of games that kids play and they would figure out ways to cheat or hack the server so that they could get rewards so they could buy like other tracks and stuff. What I like about Letterpress is it's kind of in that brainier category where you're not targeting a market that's particularly interested in cheating. You're targeting a market that's interested in having a good game. Like you could cheat at the crossword puzzle in the New York Times.
But you're cheating yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Right.
So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I just find it's almost a weird tribute that these solvers are on the market.
Yeah. And it seems like all the solvers that have popped up have been, you know, like we love Letterpress and we did this because, you know, it's fun to hack, mm-hmm. you know, not because they like to cheat, just because, you know, they wanted to hack. And I think that's a great spirit.
Although I checked their win-loss ratio before you know, say that too loudly. Maybe they were just terrible at the game.
I have lost every single game I've played, and I swear to God, I thought of writing a solver. Just as a joke. I'm terrible at this game. You make me feel stupid. I don't know why.
I know it's a strategy thing, and Lauren, you actually made a huge change to the gameplay mechanics halfway through the beta when you created protected letters. And at the beginning, it was all like random. You tried to make the coolest kind of word that you could make, but now it really behooves you to protect letters and sort of start coloring the board from one end to the other, almost like a red zombie horde descending on the poor little blue squares that remain.
Yeah, it actually was unintentional that was halfway through the beta. That was actually at the end of the beta, and I was a day away from shipping it to Apple. And then it was actually Marco Arment who brought up the fact that the game got, you know, a little tedious. And that's what forced me to kind of go back to the drawing board and come up with the new game mechanic.
Can you go into a little bit of the beta process? Because you had a very, like there was a smallish sort of beta and then you increased the size and you had a fairly good sized group of beta testers towards the end.
Yeah, no, my beta testers were, I mean, you were in on it, but they were fantastic.
I was not, so.
I apologize.
Asshole.
I'm going to send you a hockey invite now.
Everyone at Singleton was playing it under the table, you know, trying not to show anybody what they were playing, but playing against each other at different tables.
Yeah, I heard that.
You got to come next year, man.
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay, I'll make sure you get an invite.
Is there a sort of a size of beta group that you like? And do you need more beta testers or something like this than you did for maybe Tweety?
This beta was actually, I think, a little smaller than Tweety. I honestly think the beta testers have more to do with the success of the app than me. You know, I ended up building a really great beta crew for Tweety. And, you know, just the fact that they were betaing it and people found out that they were betaing it, you know, helped make the app popular. And you, I mean, you guys did the same exact thing for Letterpress. Yeah.
And I noticed the words are interesting. For example, I've played Hobbit and Bilbo, which aren't normal dictionary terms, but Vader gets rejected. So is that like a sort of a peek into your personal preferences?
No, I have not. The dictionary is about 270,000 words and I haven't, I'll admit it. I haven't reviewed them all yet, but those sound, sketchy and they might not show up in the next version.
Well, 8-bits is in there. I have played 8-bits to beat some people.
Yeah, that's my little secret.
There's nothing better than playing someone's company name when you're actually playing a Letterpress game with them. or their family name or something. You know, that's just an added incentive.
Yeah.
That's it. So because I'm nerdy, you just mentioned that you may take out a couple of words. And a lot of work that I end up doing is managing backwards and forwards compatibility so that old clients can play new tracks and all of that kind of stuff. If like 1.2 updates and it misses some words and you go look at a previous game, what rule set will be applied? Will you be including the new words? Will you not be including the new words? Is that something you've even thought about?
I'm completely ignoring the issue. Basically, whatever version you have, that's the dictionary that you can play. So if you're playing someone with a newer app and they have more words or less words, then yeah, that's that. In version 1.1, I'm adding more words than I removed. So it's
that's good. That's backwards compatible, right? But it's when you start removing words that things get weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said that previously that you weren't maximizing monetization for this, but I like the idea of paying developers because I believe the more money I throw at you, the longer you'll be interested in making the game. I don't know if that's absolutely true, but it feels to me like it's a good way to incentivize future development. Is this something that you're going to just always keep as sort of like your personal project, or do you see this becoming, I don't want to say a franchise, but sort of a bigger project down the road?
I don't know. I kind of just want to see how it plays out. I definitely don't want to go sleazy with it and, you know, start begging people for money or, you know, get them to buy some coins or anything like that. So I don't think I'm ever going to make as much money as, you know, one of these giant sleazy game studios, but
no BioVowel, for example.
That's a great idea.
Letter A, $10. There you go. You can win.
I would do that. I would definitely do that.
Or yeah, buy wild card letters. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of potential for what is essentially a very simple concept.
I'm curious, like how it would potentially translate into the real world. My biggest concern is that it seems like it would be tedious to manage the states of the colors and the state of protected tiles. But it could be a fun in real life board game.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite things to do, and I mentioned this to you on Twitter before, is I actually play it on AirPlay mirroring on an Apple TV, and it's fantastic.
That's awesome.
We mentioned previously working on the Game Center APIs, and you're almost completely dependent on Apple for that. We had iOS 6 last year, had some new things for Game Center. Presumably iOS 7 will have things for Game Center, but Apple sort of done something very interesting. They applied their standard product grid to their management team recently, and the longtime head of iOS, Scott Forstall, is now leaving the company, and his portfolio has kind of been, you know, Johnny Ive is now doing Human Interface, and Eddie Q is now doing Maps and Siri, and Craig Federighi is now doing all of the OS. What do you think about those kinds of changes at Apple?
I'm most excited about Johnny Ive being head of HI. I mean, that I think has the potential to be so awesome, like I want to cry. Everything else, you know, I don't think I have a particularly strong opinion about, but that is truly awesome.
You're hoping he yanks a tinted status bars immediately?
or something. I mean, he's the kind of guy who I think would appreciate being true to the hardware, just like he's true to aluminum and true to glass. You know, if you have an intuitive understanding of what graphics hardware is good at, there's no reason why that shouldn't permeate all the way up through what it looks like.
I got to say that I think that is one of the things I love most about Letterpress, is that when I figured out, or I don't know, I saw on Twitter or something that you'd implemented it all in OpenGL, I was like, well, yes, it flows. Like, because I know how things work, I could see exactly how true to the capabilities of the device you would be. And I think UIKit is similar in a lot of those ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It just gives you more surface area to jank it up.
Right, exactly.
Letterpress is incredibly digitally authentic. There's no real world analogs. There's no skins. Things don't look like little gaming tiles or corrugated cardboard gaming boards.
And yet, like as Lauren just said, I think you can imagine it being a board game.
Yeah.
Right. And the skeuomorphism is in the animations.
Exactly. Yeah.
What would you like to see from the new Apple management team in terms of iOS? Is there specific things that you think that are still missing for you to make the kind of apps that you want to make?
I mean, XPC is right on the horizon, and I think that's going to be really, really exciting for iOS 7. Assuming, I mean, it has to make it into iOS 7, but that's...
XPC is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it kind of, I don't know why it wasn't in iOS 6, because I mean, it's been on the Mac and it seems solid.
It's been on iOS since iOS 5.
Oh, really? They just haven't made
it
public.
But it's not, exactly, yeah. Because some, like 5 beta, some headers, maybe Mac headers leaked with like the, you know, they do that macro declaration of when it's available.
Yeah.
And it had iOS 5 in it.
Huh.
So I wrote to an Apple fan being like, you guys are leaking information here. And it's like, as I heard back, it wouldn't be public, but it's there. I think iOS 7 is going to be very interesting because one of the things that's not well known about iOS 6 is that they broke Springboard into two pieces. Springboard is the launcher system, like the home screen, basically. And it used to be that Springboard was in charge of doing all of the window management, which meant that Springboard itself would manage all of the application windows and swap between them and all of that. But it's since in iOS 6, it's been broken into two pieces. There's Springboard and there's Backboard. And Backboard is now basically the Windows server. And that is going to mean that there's a lot more opportunity to, a lot more flexibility to manipulate windows on the system, I think. Windows meaning basically the OpenGL context, which all applications draw into. So I'm excited to see what
the decoupling does for the...
Exactly, because between XPC and the ability to embed one window in another, one OpenGL context inside another, I think there's going to be some interesting possibilities coming. Do you have any thoughts on that, Lauren?
I think you nailed it. I think it's gonna usher in a whole new class of apps.
Right. I'm thinking like not specifically, but the way that Siri does those plugins,
yeah,
right,
could handle in that kind of way,
and also completely headless apps.
Exactly, yeah. Which is weird to think about on iOS. I don't know, because there's all that battery stuff, and I don't know how they prioritize capabilities, right, over basically battery cost.
But I mean, think about it. Let's say you have 6 headless services that need to make a network connection. You know, the OS could be smart, and you know, when it spins up the radio, you know, it just like turns on all those for half a second each, or like a couple seconds each, and they all batch together.
Yeah, I know they do that for their own stuff. They there was basically one persistent connection that sort of manages like mail and iMessage and all of that.
Yeah.
Get traveled through to that one place. Yeah, and actually game center notifications.
Yeah, open that up to third parties.
You think? I don't know.
Well, I mean, they have a review process in place. If someone's abusing the system, you know, take them down. But, you know, you can do interesting things.
Yeah, I agree. So one thing that I don't think will appear anytime soon is a third-party Siri API.
And that upsets me because Google Search is so awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think they won't do a Siri API, though, because Apple seems to want to do that as a partnership play where they sort of get, you know, Yelp, or they get the movie ticket stuff, where they get OpenTable, and they make a deal where the content gets shipped to there. And if they do an API, then they lose the ability to make specific content deals.
Well, I think there's two things going on there. There's the inherent difficulty of disambiguation, wherein if you just say a sentence and apps claim certain keywords, applications can collide and you don't know which one to necessarily pass off the request to. And I think that's a hard problem to solve. The second thing is, given that that's a hard problem to solve, maybe it's better for Apple to just work with certain partners, and because then they have the power relationship. They can say to OpenTable, well, we'll swap you out for something else. So they can say to Yelp, like, you will do X, or else you're off the phone.
It's a brokerage deal.
Exactly. And I fear that Apple TV is kind of going to be the same way. I'd love to see an API for Apple TV. I imagine, Lauren, you'd love to work on something for the TV.
Oh yeah, I mean, games would be a no-brainer. But I'm actually talking about a completely different. Like, I'm sorry, I totally misunderstood the Siri API question. But I'm looking at it completely differently. I want an API so when I press and hold the home button, Google Search is the thing that pops up.
Oh, different default apps.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And you could choose Chrome instead of Safari, right. And you could choose Sparrow instead of Mail.app.
Right. And this is like bordering into antitrust territory, but you know, there's no reason Google Search shouldn't be able to like hook into the native APIs for, you know, setting timers and like stuff like that.
Well, something like setting a timer, it seems like you could do the classic, implement a URL scheme.
Right.
So
I guess they could do it.
Well, that's sort of like the problem, like we don't have anything like intents or like contracts the way that Android or Windows Phone have.
That's my biggest hope for iOS 7, and I've been wanting to write a piece on that for ages. And it goes back to having these embedded windows from other processes and XBC. But I don't know. I think they're just finally put all the pieces in place to be able to implement something like that in a sane manner.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that they waited. You know, they didn't hack something together Android style.
One thing that is nice about Apple is that they often come late, but they come with a good game.
They did it right.
You know, like a well-considered sort of implementation.
They measure 10 times, fake cut 3 times, and make 1 slice.
Yeah. Or they just tell you, no.
Yeah.
They don't even tell you. It's just like, no, you're never getting that. It's never going to happen.
Well, it's because it's not really a computer. It's sort of a computing appliance. And they now have the classic problem of dragging 100 million of my mothers behind iOS. Who would get horribly confused at the mere thought of different browsers. So do they want to bury settings somewhere deep where only the nerds can go find them and swap out apps? Or do they want to just make a blanket statement that this is not a computer? You can't do what you can do on a computer on it.
Right. So, Lauren, you've been around since the beginning. I've always felt that for a long time I've felt that the springboard metaphor is limited. And I don't have a better suggestion, but it feels like it's going to run out of legroom at some point soon.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, but like when I can look at the alternatives, at least like Android's home screen, it's just such a nightmare.
Right.
I guess you know I kind of like what Palm did, where your main screen wasn't a list of apps; it was the things that you're working on right now in cards.
Yeah. And the stacks were very nice.
Yeah.
So you could group cards together based on projects as well.
I think the card metaphor is the closest I've seen to a perfect like launcher home screen thing.
Which Apple did in Safari Pages and just never made it prolific through the OS.
Right.
Yeah, that seems like a natural, but who knows? It's
flabbergasting.
Flabbergasting.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see which way, because Android, again, it has all those widgets on the home screen, but Apple just wants the home screen to get you into apps. They want you to live in apps, but then they don't have actionable notifications the way that webOS had either. So you've got to move between apps. And I'm hoping that's the next big change, is that I don't want to have to go and hunt for data the way I do on Android and go look for a widget. I just want all that data to come to me. And if they could put up an SMS notification that I could do a quick reply in, or if they could put up an alarm notification that I could quickly adjust without me having to switch apps, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
So there's one thing that I thought about. When the phone was first introduced with iOS, everybody remarked at how simple and clean and direct the user interface was, which is correct. But it's really hard to grow out of those sort of initial simple constraints. And I'm not sure that just adding stuff like folders and newsstand is a great way to go forward.
Those are Band-Aids.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like increasingly we're going to get more and more Band-Aids. And while initially the iPhone or iOS was lauded for its simplicity, eventually we're going to get to the point with iOS where it's like Mac OS X, which is not complicated per se, but there's a lot of just Band-Aids stuck in there. You know, like if you look at Launchpad on OS X, it's, you know, kind of just hacked in there. Or what's it called? Mission Control. kind of a similar thing. It's obviously a layer on top of like this previous stuff.
Yeah, I think OS 9 is probably a closer analogy.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So stuff gets convoluted. What would you do? Because I don't know. I mean, it's a design question, but it's also a programming question because you need to consider everything that went before. In general, when designing and working on software, do you consider the possible paths forward? Like, if I make this decision, where can I go from here?
I mean, it's...
I know it's a very high-end, vague question, but I mean, just...
Yeah, no, I don't know if I necessarily, at least this is how I work, I don't necessarily put a ton of thought before I start working. I mean, I always work. And it's like fog of war, and you know, when you play like games, yeah. You know, it's like you can only see for some radius around you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need to wander, and then eventually you'll stumble on something or something bad, and then you have to double back and try a different route. And, you know, I don't know. I guess my process is pretty messy.
No, I think we have a very similar process, actually. I do the same thing. Increasingly, I've found myself worrying about compatibility issues, though. Because when you hit something that is a... So one of the big titles I worked on, I've mentioned already, is TapTap Revenge. And for a track in TapTap Revenge, we download... I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to anyway. We download an audio file, a bunch of image assets, and a Lua script that... controls the gameplay and the animations.
You're getting booted out of the store.
Don't have to say that directly, dude.
You can edit that out.
Okay, whatever. It's the first, you know, it's the first episode. Nobody's going to be listening. It's not. Yeah. So, and we've always done that. We skirted that issue well before that was an accepted thing to do, because you're a game and you get away with stuff when you're a game, and we were popular and we were well known, so it wasn't an issue. Christ, if you're listening, please don't kick them out of the store.
They don't do it anymore anyway.
I know. It's fine. And nobody's stupid. People just look the other way.
Yeah.
Please keep looking the other way. The issue then becomes, as the game engine evolves and this level definition script that we have is expected to target the same, is expected to run across all of these versions, it becomes increasingly difficult to support older themes. But we must, because we've sold them to people. Yeah. And they're sitting on their phones. So backwards compatibility has become like a major sort of, and forwards compatibility has become sort of like a major interest of mine. And it is really boring and very like detailed work, but it is in many ways pretty essential to get right. Do you think about that? Do you have any strategies for that? Have you ever had to run up against that in your career, or have you been sort of fortunate enough to be able to dodge it?
No, I don't think I've hit it quite to the same extent that you have. But yeah, I've run into it, and it's always been a nightmare. And I haven't come up with like kind of I haven't generalized how to solve it.
Yeah. I don't know if it can be generalized. I was just hoping for something smart.
No. I think we're all kind of in the same boat.
I think that's like the design choices of the Springboard. And iOS in general, and you know, and these kind of software choices that you make, I think a lot of choices get made that sort of get set in stone.
And yeah, accidentally.
Exactly, accidentally, and you have to keep working on them. And you can be nimble and hope to overcome them, or you can sort of maybe hope to be smart and hope to plan for them. But ultimately, I think the longevity of software is something that is hard to think about at the moment, but ultimately one of the most important things to consider.
Yeah. Well put.
What was interesting to me, Lauren, is that you were almost I guess you were one of the first to do a new app for an update. Tweety 2 was a whole new app on the App Store. And others have done it since. And it seems whenever there's a big app that does it, it's a little bit controversial. Did that work out the way that you wanted it? And would you do that again?
I wouldn't do it again, but I think it was the right decision at the time. I mean, knowing what I know now, I would plan for something like this. And I mean, I would take a totally different approach to selling apps. You know, I wouldn't charge $2.99 up front. I wouldn't do it. The free with an in-app purchase, you know, like pay for feature style, like that. I mean, that seems like a good way to sell software. And it's certainly the way Apple wants you to sell software. You know, they don't want you to charge for a massive update. For technical reasons, I couldn't go the in-app purchase route back in the Tweety days because it was literally a whole new app. Like it wasn't a couple of slacks. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I thought about it, but it would have been interesting if I tried to like combine the two into one and then just have a separate app delegate for each one and literally launch a different app. But that seems like it would have been very gnarly.
That's crazy.
Maybe fragile.
Yeah, don't.
Don't do that.
Well, I can understand why that would be an option that you would consider. But I mean, just from a development point of view, you have to realize that like at that point, you're modeling your code base in order to support some weird app store restriction. Yeah. So
you're paying for past sins on future goods.
So would you say you've sort of embraced the race to the bottom? Like you're okay with it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, if Apple set the price floor any lower than 99 cents, I mean, what if they set a price floor at 10 cents? I'm sure there would be 10 cent apps in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. At what point does it become unsustainable?
I can't even get candy for 10 cents anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so your point of view is, well, it's not to project on you, but it's basically screw it. I'm going to give it away for free and charge for premium features.
I like that approach only because it gives me flexibility in the future.
Now, does that work? That is a great model for games. Yeah. Certainly the games I've worked on, because you can always sell downloadable content effectively, not just on iOS, but on any platform. They've even got like an acronym for it, it's DLC. That is a great model for games, where you've effectively got an engine and you just feed it goodies and they play for it. How does that work in the world of applications, though? Like actual, not letterpress, which I find it's halfway between a game and an application, letterpress, but like actual applications. How would that work for, say, Tweety?
For Tweety, you know, I put a little bit of thought into it. I'm sure I came up with a dozen ideas, but the one I remember was, it was free for one account, and if you wanted to put more than one account into it, you know, you paid a premium. And that was a very pro feature. It was a niche of the market, but that niche needed the feature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an absolute requirement.
Right.
So I could have charged a decent amount of money for that upgrade, I think.
Yeah, I think I would have paid $10 for it. Like, I have two accounts at least, so.
I think that was Twitterific's model. You got rid of ads, and you got multiple accounts.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Okay. At least with one of the newer versions of Twitterific. The paper charges you you get the brush, you get the ink, I think, for free, and then you get the brush and the other tools for in-app purchases.
Yeah, I love paper. Yeah, I guess that model works. I mean, I have no idea what their conversion rate is, but the app is awesome.
Wait, is it free? It is, yeah.
It is free, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I immediately bought every tool imaginable, and then I bought the mixer the day it came out. Do you think there's a place still for time bombing? I mean, you're not allowed doing that on iOS, but do you think there's still a place for that you get it for free for a certain amount of time and then you have to pay for it?
No, I think that's kind of lame. I mean, everyone's different, you know. I don't think you can say, oh, I mean, you can use it for an hour. You know, I can't get a sense or 2 weeks. You know, I might use it once in 2 weeks. I don't know. I like the idea of paying for something of value, and features have value.
Yeah. I think that's an old school kind of way of approaching things. Timing out an app is something that you do in like 1998. You know, it's
with a serial dongle on the computer to run it in the first place.
Yeah. Oh man, that would be awesome. Lauren, your next app, Serial Dongle. You'll mail it, individually mail it to people.
It has to go in the 3.5 because Apple locks down the Lightning now, but you can still get away with it.
Exactly. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
You know what? I swear to God, I think you could sell, like, you charge $50 for an app with an actual dongle for it. You would sell. You'd get at least $50.
Well, Square is basically a dongle.
Yeah, I know. It'd be great. Yeah, Square is interesting. Square with that little dongle thing seems to be doing pretty well. But do you guys ever use that?
I want to. I wanted to use CardCase for so long, but nobody takes it in Philadelphia. I mean, Level Up kind of took over Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm not sure if it's public, but they're coming to Canada. And
they
I've
are.
Got
they're like in the Apple store now.
Okay, good. Yeah, so I've got a dongle, but I mean, I've never used it.
Likewise.
Yeah, I've only used the dongle to pay myself like $1 to see if it would work, and it did. It worked.
But if you sell the letterpress board game, you can run that through Square.
Did you use the signing view, the signature view?
Yeah. No, I signed my own signature and everything.
Yeah, that was me. You're welcome.
It's stunning. How do you smooth the strokes? Do you do it on the fly or do you like wait for?
This is why I wanted to mention it. Holy crap, that was a pain in the ass to do.
Yeah.
So I was doing Bezier curves and then doing a bunch of math on them. Totally failed.
Yeah.
I imagine that there is a correct way of doing it through math. I don't know about you. I'm bad at math. Like, I'm good at graphics. I'm good at a lot of things. I know what I'm good at. I'm good at making things work like so that they feel natural. And math is not in my tool bag too much, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to make myself sound stupid, but I'm sure as a graphics programmer, you know where I'm going with it, right? Like, it's...
No, I know. And I'm certainly way worse at math now than I used to be. Like in high school, I think, maybe this is me misremembering, but I think I was pretty decent at it. You know, I was like deriving, you know, calculus things, you know, like I was trying to do it faster than my teacher could write it on the board. And, you know, I was taking like number theory classes and from like a community college. And now I can't even do long division anymore.
Yeah.
I'm so lazy.
Well, you get made lazy by it. Constant access to a computer where you can just type in whatever you want. Like, so I know how to apply pretty high order math stuff to a problem. And I can't remember exactly the details of how it works.
Exactly.
You know, I'm just, I need to do this to that and I can get, you know, that's what I know and I do it. Anyway, I couldn't figure the signing thing out. What I ended up doing was a simulation. Depending on the distance between the points, and the speed and the time, I would make the brush thinner or thicker. So if you're going slow, then it got thick. And if you're going fast, then it became thinner. And purely by just simulating it at each point, at each sort of touch point and interpolating between the points, I managed to achieve like a pretty decent looking line.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's the, you know, the, often in computer graphics, if you do the dumb way, you get a nice natural result. Yeah, so that's what I chose to do.
Or at least, I mean, think about it. It's all physics, and physics is some of the simplest math there is. At least, I mean, at the level we're working.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it was a blast to do, and I ended up kind of proud of it. So, but what I liked best about it is I spent most of my time trying to do this really complicated derivation of like X number of input factors. And what ended up working well was a relatively simple simulation of the way a brush would work while dragged across a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got from letterpress to that, but we did. It's our first show. So, you know.
We have a lot of leeway.
We're learning.
Awesome. Lauren, thank you very much for joining us for our debut episode. Where can people find out more about you, about 8-Bits, and about Letterpress?
8bits.com.
Very succinct. I happen to know you also have a Twitter account.
I do, at 8bits, A-T-E-B-I-T-S.
I'm at GTE on Twitter and whatever they're calling that other thing, app.net. Hey, Lauren, app.net client. Here's a brilliant idea for you.
No, I don't get app.net.
Yeah. Oh, you on it?
No.
That's weird. When?
Well, I mean, this is a whole different topic.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You know what? We've already had an hour and a half, and I'm kind of bored of you. yeah, GT on Twitter and app.net and kickingbear.com on the internets. And I'd like to really thank Lauren for being the debut guest, because I think we, you know, we got off on a really good foot. I had a lovely time talking to you, Lauren. Thank you.
It's a heck of a way to come out of the gate.
It was an honor being on the show. Thank you.